I take it all of you are here to hear Mark Gustafson in his presentation. I wonder if we might send somebody over to see. There may have been a mix-up on the room on this this session. I think we'll go ahead and commence here. There may have been some misunderstanding among some as to where this session was to be held, but I'll slip over there and see if anybody's been misdirected. I'm pleased to welcome you to this session. My name's Stuart Pullman, and I'm pleased to introduce our speaker and the responder to this session. As you can see from the program, Mr. Mark Gustafson, it is. He was born in Berkeley, California, but has been a resident of Salt Lake City for the past 31 years. He's married and has three children, attended Olympus High School and the University of Utah, where he received his BA degree in philosophy and later his JD degree in law in 1976. He currently is in private practice of law as a sole practitioner, specializing in tax, pensions, and corporate planning, and representing major clients here in Salt Lake. He has presented a paper in 1981 in the Sunstone Symposium on Mormon Women and the Priesthood, in which he took the position that it was unjust to withhold formal recognition of women's priesthood, since Mormon women do in fact hold priesthood in certain situations. He is a gospel doctrine teacher in the Crescent 15th Ward in Sandy. He is also a friend of Kent Robson, who will be responding to this presentation, but I don't believe he's arrived, and I'm going to go try to find him. In any event, Mr. Gustafson's presentation we anticipate to be about 20 minutes, and Mr. Robson's response approximately 15, and then I suppose if there is time for questions and answers, we'll entertain those. Thank you, Mark. Oh, here's Kent Robson now. I have just introduced you. The grand entrance here.
I always need to pull those up about 4 feet. Pleased to be with you here this morning, and hopefully you can give me some cogent criticism and suggestions on my paper entitled Human Achievement and Religious Awe, A Perspective of Joy. On a bright afternoon several years ago, I stood with thousands of others on a Salt Lake City street in a joyful greeting to the space shuttle on the way to its maiden voyage. Transfixed by the sight, the exclamation of the crowd started out as a hushed approval and then rose to an exultant shout. In the presence of human greatness, recognizing all of which we are capable, it seemed that my reaction and that of the crowd was a religious one. Swept away by the promise of human potential and the strife that has blighted so much of human history, the opportunity to progress and achieve seemed to be indistinguishable from my worship of the gods, as my Mormon metaphysics declared. Though I was and remain ignorant of the actual procedures that led to the construction of that beautiful craft, I nevertheless knew that it was built by people properly exercising their potential toward wholly proper ends by constructing this artifact of incomparable beauty. Reflecting on this event sometime later, when the immediate effect of that miraculous time had somewhat diminished, it seemed to my that my initial connection between a proper reverence for legitimate human achievement and religious worship within the Mormon context was profoundly correct. The act of worshiping the Mormon gods seems more centered on their act of achieving their greatness rather than focusing on other and thus less important issues. In this paper, I intend to establish the philosophical definitions and background necessary to my thesis that there is a unique and profound connection between Mormon doctrine, worship, and the appreciation of human achievement. Having established these fundamentals, I hope to fill in the details of my thesis and then move on to an exploration of the implications such a theory holds for the concerns for human self-worth and autonomy. In order to more directly proceed to the essence of this paper, thereby exploring more efficiently the implications of this notion, I want to quickly review what I take to be core Mormon metaphysical beliefs and set out certain definitions under which this paper will proceed. These relevant beliefs include, first, the universe is, in principle, an organization of uncreated material components, the operation of which could be adequately comprehended by a sufficiently advanced and knowledgeable entity. The universe is the result of both naturally occurring elements and organizations brought about by intelligent entities. Second, the Mormon deities are uncreated, who, through their sufficient mastery of the laws, both moral and physical, ascended to the status of the gods. These gods organize chaotic matter toward goals that promote the eternal progression and achievement of all intelligent entities. Third, human beings do not essentially differ from the gods. We are uncreated, eternal, and subject to the laws which can facilitate, alternatively, our exaltation or degeneracy. Fourth, mortal life carries with it essential importance. Mormons believe that actions done in mortal life carry with them eternal significance. Goodness here may well be identical to eternal goodness. In order that we might uniformly employ certain terms, I will be using the following words in rather radical ways, by way of offering reformatory definitions. Worship is a reverent celebration of legitimate achievement by whomever performed. Namely, a thing is worthy of worship where the otherwise contingent connection between beauty, achievement, and long-term human interests become inextricably linked. Beauty is a necessary connection between the objectively pleasing and the ethically good, that correlation that leads to works of art, philosophy, technology, literature, and other legitimate human achievements. With this background in mind, we can more precisely address the question, are we not engaging in the worship of the gods when we honor legitimate human achievement? Moreover, does not worship become an effort equivalently experienced by the gods and humanity when either group reviews the excellence of which human beings, whether exalted or mortal, are capable? It seems to me that the process of achievement is at least as important as any particular item of achievement when operating within a metaphysical framework which promises and requires the step-by-step conquest of a universe whose function can be sufficiently explained by the operations of law, the incremental mastery over which celebrates the ability and the desire to achieve. Because the gods achieved their status through their efforts, which efforts had to be moral, legitimate, and otherwise beneficial, if humanity discovers a medical procedure or some other genuine achievement, our joy at such advancement is not meaningfully distinguishable from our worship of the gods. The drive to appreciate beauty and legitimate human achievement is worship, because we all, the gods and mortals alike, pursue identical goals through similar actions. We cannot appreciate each item of progression and achievement without paying more fundamental homage to the process, that is, the context in which those methods and achievements operate. For the reason that the gods achieve their current status through their self-willed mastery over the laws of the universe, our homage, our worship, must be focused upon the incremental goals that must be achieved on the way to godhood, and upon the uncreated universe which facilitates and permits such purposeful effort. To the degree that both the gods and humanity walk the same path to advancement, goodness, and glory, both groups properly reverence, celebrate, and worship the incremental achievements of the other and of themselves. The mastery of the universe is a partnership effort where the proper actions of all parties are a cause of legitimate joy. Because of this understanding, Mormons cannot bow to mere power. Rather than fashioning an ethic around the first premise of an all-powerful God, whose actions know no bounds, whether externally or internally imposed. The Mormon metaphysic focuses on the moral worth and intellectual achievement of the gods. Since power is morally neutral, it does not provide a sufficient foundation upon which a successful and enduring ethos might be built. In Mormon theology, power attends to goodness and evil. As such, then, mortals ought not to worship mere power, for it is a seductive master. The power, that is the efficacy to draw a distinction, that follows the gods, that flows from their goodness and achievement, wherever appearing, ought to be the source of our joy, and thus the focus of our admiration. Within the Mormon metaphysic, we have established that there is no essential difference between an individual act of accomplishment performed by a mortal or by a god. Since the enlightened goals of mortals and the gods are synonymous, the path to achieve godhood must be equivalent, if not identical, regarding certain fundamentals. Therefore, since the reverence for unqualified power does not establish a sufficient recommendation for our use and emulation, then the reverence for the achievement of good acts is worship, for the reason that we are honoring both the process which allows the progression and the individual who advances within that framework. In this regard, the distinction between reverence and worship blurs out of metaphysical necessity. Whether this worship also serves as a homage to a god, and homage to the gods, is a remaining issue. Before moving to a demonstration of this argument, it seems necessary to acknowledge that Mormon beliefs, perhaps unique among Western religious systems, declare that morality and purposeful effort are necessary attributes to the ascendancy to godhood. Simply, not everyone will achieve those standards necessary to reach this final exaltation. Since any item of accomplishment requires the achievement of the prerequisites necessary to that position, and because those who arrive at any particular level of achievement only contingently possess the attributes necessary to that point, in that such virtues are not a necessary attribute of those personalities, and conceivably, once having achieved a particular point, one could abandon that level of achievement, then it seems that our honoring of the gods ought to focus more on the process of advancement, along with the incremental items of accomplishment, and less upon their personalities. Curiously, then, we are, or ought to be, somewhat less interested in persons who have preceded us to godhood, and more profoundly oriented toward those procedures which can lead to our similar advancement. You see, if we were to concentrate our religious reverence on considering the past acts of grace and dispensation of the gods, we would lose so much of what defines our religion and embrace so much of Christian orthodoxy. If we believe the gods are interested in our progression, then our legitimate reverence for their past acts extends only to the point of reverencing their efficacy and to the example such behavior serves to us. This is a fundamental point upon which so much turns in Mormon theology. Namely, we are a process theology, and we should not seem much disposed toward honoring persons apart from respecting the path to eternal progression that those gods have set out for our later travel. The teachings of Jesus and the examples which obtained thereby are at least as important as the atonement. But what do these arguments have to do with the nexus between our mortal respect for the legitimate achievement of human beings and the proper reverence for the gods? It seems to me that by getting clear on our proper reaction to the gods, we have more clearly shown the connection. Namely, if the gods acquired their current status by wisely employing their natural abilities to overcome brutality, ignorance, suffering, and stupidity on their way to mastering the universe for wise and moral ends, can we do anything but focus on our own simile of their actions? If this is so, then a respect for objectively important and legitimate human achievement is worship, for the precise reason that the Mormon gods have not always been gods. If our gods were not process deities and had always been possessed of the unity and oneness of the traditional Western Christian beliefs, then, as Calvin suggests, human achievement is essentially unimportant to God. Under this Christian theology, we would have to focus on the power and immutability of God, which would make meaningless any claim that celebrating human achievement was any sort of religious act at all, or even important in the least degree. However, Mormons, when we clearly understand the competing beliefs, view those dictums with bemused rejection. We cannot but equate our own virtue with the proper worship of the gods. But lest this discussion be thought an inapplicable delineation of these issues, let's examine the implications of my thesis. If we are interested in eternal advancement and progression, any metaphysical system must serve the interests of humanity by adding dignity and objective worth to life. A belief which expresses contempt for human life, whether express or implied, cannot hope to add to such advancement and progression. It seems that notions of human dignity and autonomy are enhanced by the reformative approach to the relationship between religious worship and appreciation of human effort, in distinct opposition to the view that all of human achievement is doomed to extinction in the final death of the universe. Mormons must believe that legitimate action carries with it objective and eternal importance. Achievement can affect mortal and immortal, the reason that human existence is a continuum, stretching backward and forward in time without limit. What we do does matter. As we can positively affect our eternal status, we may also foreclose future options. If there is joy and success in achievement, then there is poignancy in failure. You see, if achievement is real, then so is its absence. And therein lies the regret, that certain sense of lost opportunity, betrayed promise, and abandoned hopes. The sadness of a necessary and avoidable failure and loss is profound. Thus, since mortals are genuinely capable of affecting their destinies, every action must be viewed with enhanced and profoundly enhanced meaning. The adoption or rejection of a particular idea or action may suddenly acquire real and eternal meaning. But what would come of these ideas? By the adoption of this new reverence for human effort and its connection to worship, human life would immediately acquire profound and eternal significance. When human beings are acting morally and pursuing proper goals, namely those consistent with their long-term interests, the goals, the purposes of the gods and of humanity are identical. A great sense of common purpose and mutual respect and dignity ennoble the human struggle. Since there is an eternal battle against ignorance and evil and error, our contributed efforts are as valuable, even if not as presently efficacious, as the work of the gods. Instead of facing futility at every step, a sense of courage and cheerfulness would flow from the belief that life is not a cruel play written by an unknowable and all-powerful God, nor an existence where both the play and the stage are created by the actors themselves and offered to a cold and dead cosmos. Perhaps unique among Western religious tradition, the believing and acting Mormon has an unavoidable hand in his or her own future, for which no other person's actions might be substituted. Astride the Western Christian tradition, which so often emphasized the depravity of the human soul and the worthlessness of human effort, the Mormon affirms and glorifies in the genuine ability of each person to make real choices and to achieve genuine and eternal greatness. And finally, humanity would be forever freed of the burden of fearing God, where fear was not a misused code word for respect and admiration. We would be able to address the establishment of a world where morality and achievement commanded the attention of other mortals and of the gods. In the place of obeisance, humanity would bow only to law and virtue, wherever and in whomever present. A fear of God's power has never been legitimate worship. To believe otherwise is to ignore that there is a profound difference between goodness and power. In the presence of the transcendent beauty of accomplishment, achieved by the efforts of persons in possession of the knowledge that they matter, a proper and helpful ethos of worship might develop. As part of a great continuum in which the gods and humanity play a necessary, goal-oriented, and equivalent part, an eternal partnership is formed in which all celebrate achievement, goodness, and progression. In this way, homage is paid by all to a common evaluative standard. In respecting the beauty of the universe, or the loveliness of an aircraft, a poem, an act of charity, a work of insight, or other legitimate effort, the gods and humanity worship. By so acting, we are reverencing our mutual worth, our natural abilities, and encouraging the ongoing progression of the human condition. Thank you.